Stroud in the shotgun with a snap. Back to pass. Screens it left side. Henderson to his own 30, 35, 40. Henderson hits the 50-yard line into Minnesota territory. Henderson to the 30. Henderson to the 20. And he'll take it all the way to the house. Travion Henderson. They want to be down with the kids.
Welcome to The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, featuring John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
I love being around them.
Get involved by phone at 713-780-3776. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, the kings of Houston sports radio, John and Lance.
And I love being around you. David Culley, I have really not been around you at all at any point up to this point in our relationship. But I just want you to know that that I'm going to be soon. And with that headline, you hear, with that soundbite to start the show, you heard that college football is back. And man, was it back yesterday. Aaron and I were talking about this before the show. It's college football is the... Oh, by the way, I'm just rambling on. So John is out today. He went to a wedding up in the Wisconsin area. And Wisconsin plays Penn State this weekend. It's actually a pretty big game, 19 versus 12. Right out of the gate, we've got some games this week now. We got some games right out of the gate. So here's what's going to happen today. I am going to be your host for the first hour. I've got Greg Cosell from NFL Films coming on at 7:30. We're going to talk about a lot of the NFL action and news. There's a ton of different news and notes that are out there already that I want to get to. Tony Romo saying Zach Wilson could be the next Pat Mahomes. That's one of them. The nation's unquenchable desire to see Cam Newton as a starter somewhere and pretend like he's coming off a 30-touchdown, 10-interception season instead of 10 interceptions and 8 touchdowns. We have the Carson Wentz saga where he may be back for the Colts now, the vaccination stories in the NFL. There's actually a lot of stuff to get to with Greg Cosell. And that guy is as good as it gets when it comes to breaking down NFL action. He watches damn near all the games, at least sections and portions of all the games. So we'll get to that with him at 7:30 every Friday, 7:30 from 7:30 to 8. We do that with him. Mano Martinez, who is a Houston-based MMA fighter who got a decision win last weekend, his first fight in the UFC. We are going to congratulate him, and he is going to join us at 8:30. His coach, his longtime coach, Saul Solis, who is a friend of mine. I consider him a friend. I mean, Saul was, I didn't spend as much time with Saul, but I got to know Saul about, I guess about 18, 19 years ago when a guy named James Cooper brought him in studio along with Rico Rodriguez and Tito Ortiz way back in the day. John and I have been doing UFC stuff from I think the first time we had a UFC fighter was 2000. We had Mark Kerr, the Smashing Machine, in studio. Well, Saul is a longtime coach here in Houston and a really good one, and he passed away. And so we'll visit with Mano Martinez a little bit. Good to have a champ here. I mean, not a champ, but another UFC fighter here in Houston. He is a hard-punching bantamweight, and some big things are expected of him. So we'll visit with him at 8:30. And we may have Tom Pelissero from the NFL Network. I'm waiting to get confirmation on that one. Until then, I will take all your phone calls. If you guys want to jump in and throw your two cents in, I'm certainly willing to bring you up very, very quickly. 713-780-3776. 713-780-3776. You can reach me on Twitter at Lance Zierlein. And if you want to sit back and listen, you can do that as well. I'll be checking out Twitter, check out the Twitch stream from time to time to see if there's a comment. And of course, if you guys want to jump in, we'll get you on very quickly. College football is back and it's underway. And I thought immediately, the thing that stood out to me, I was watching Ohio State and Minnesota. It's PJ Fleck from Minnesota. Ohio State, of course, always going to be a powerhouse whenever they play. But in that game, Minnesota had a lead at the half, and C.J. Stroud was not good, the quarterback for Ohio State. In general, he wasn't that great, but the big plays that were hit by Ohio State were the big difference in that one. It was 45-31. Ohio State won that despite being down at half. Ibrahim had 30 carries for 163 yards and 2 touchdowns, but he injured himself. The running back from Minnesota was injured. He is a talented running back. lower leg injury. They're going to find out how bad it is today. There is some concern that it could be something that is long term, at least for the balance of this season. C.J. Stroud, as I mentioned, the Ohio State quarterback this year, 13 to 22, 294 yards. But listen to this. Can you beat a team when a team does this to you? Ask yourself this question. 71-yard touchdown run for Ohio State, 56-yard touchdown pass, 32-yard fumble return on a strip sack, 70-yard touchdown run, 61-yard touchdown pass. That's impossible. That's impossible to beat a team like that. It's not possible. You have a defensive touchdown return, and you have four touchdowns, two runs, two passes over 50 yards. You can't beat a team that does that to you. That's just simply not going to happen. So it was Ohio State winning in that one. But I think the big takeaway, Aaron, was you and I both talked about it. It's weird. It's like, I don't know why it's like sports are sneaking up on us. I don't get that. I've done sports talk my entire professional life. I've been a sports fan since I was 3 or 4. When I'm watching, I remember crying when Rocky Soul Man Johnson, Dwayne Johnson's dad, got his eyes burned out by the Sheik watching wrestling, and I started crying when I was 5 years old. I remember watching O.J. Simpson go off against Miami when I was like 3 or 4. I still have vivid memories of that. And yet, college football seems to like just kind of sneak up on us this year. And then you go from the COVID stuff last year to seeing 50K in the stands in Minnesota. And now, listen, Delta variant we know is wreaking havoc. Hospital beds and ICUs and people being ventilated. And we get the more and more masks you see coming back out as people are being more cautious and all that. I get all that. But we're not going to go backwards. I mean, we may go backwards in some areas to an extent. But, like, sports, they're in. Sports are in, and that's the way it's going to be. And you had 50K in the stands, and it was I'm not making a political statement or a science statement or anything like that. I understand the dangers and all that. Just from a sports fan standpoint, it was fun to have the atmosphere back watching Minnesota have a lead at half against Ohio State. 50K in the stands going crazy. Like, for me, college football is the most exciting fan-based sport there is. Other ones certainly have, you know, playoff baseball is awesome. Basketball in the playoffs can be really great. The NFL can be really great from stadium to stadium. But on the whole, college football, when you have a big game, it's about as good as it gets.
Oh, 100%. And I mean, you're talking to a guy who married an Aggie who spent a lot of years going to Aggie games from when I was a child to when we were dating and she was in grad school and all that stuff. You can give me the option of going to any live event, probably entertainment-wise in the history of the world, I'd probably pick a college football game.
Mike, the greatest game I've gone to, my two favorite games I've ever gone to, one of them was my dad winning a Super Bowl. And this is, you know, and my dad's been a college coach since I was 8. He was a high school coach before then. My entire life that I can remember, my dad was a coach. I've seen him go through some really difficult times, some really challenging times. He was with some not good teams. It was very, very tough for him. And I watched him win a Super Bowl in Tampa with the Pittsburgh Steelers against Arizona. And I'm near the end zone where Santonio Holmes makes the incredible catch. They've got to review it, and they call it a touchdown. And I see he and my mom, you know, having a moment on the field. Really cool for me personally. With that said, and that game was a great game. That game was a great game. You had a Larry Fitzgerald long touchdowns to take the lead. Right before Pittsburgh had their super long drive to win the game. You had the touchdown by James Harrison before the half. Like, it was a really good game. With that said, my favorite game I've ever been to is probably Texas-USC, the national championship game in 2006 that Vince went off on. We flew in that day, flew out that same night, and to experience that with half the stadium being Texas, half the stadium being basically USC. I wouldn't even say half and half. I mean, there were a lot of people there who were just college football fans, but it was in that neighborhood of half and half. Despite my family's achievement, my dad's achievement, really, I still think USC-Texas might have been the coolest experience I had in the Rose Bowl, and experiencing that whole thing was just amazing. And, you know, and I look at the games this weekend. Texas, by the way, I'll start off with them. They take on Louisiana. You may call them Louisiana Lafayette. But I'm telling you right now, Billy Napier, the head coach, they won 3 straight titles in the Sun Belt. They're 28-11 during that time. They've got their Levi Lewis, their starting quarterback, is back. They got 20 starters back, 10 on offense, 10 on defense. I'm just telling you right now, if you think that you hear the name University of Louisiana and you're going to side-eye that, you better be very careful, because every year this team is, when we do our offensive line stuff with the Joe Moore Awards, this is a team we have to pay very close attention to. They did lose two very good running backs, but they have another one coming back. They got all five offensive linemen coming back. Texas is in for a dogfight in this one. They really are. And I love Bijan Robinson. I think he's the, I think he might be the most talented back in the nation when it's all said and done for Texas. But Steve Sarkisian, in his first matchup, he's got his hands full with Louisiana. I mean, his hands absolutely full. Number one, speaking of hands full, Alabama, number one. I'm just going to take you down a couple of the big matchups this weekend. Alabama takes on the NIL king, De'Aaron King. He's king of the NILs, obviously. Name, image, license, made a ton of money. Now he's got to go out there and play well. There's a lot of people spending money on De'Aaron King for his likeness, and he needs to play well, and it starts with Alabama. They only have 11 returning starters, but eight of them are on defense. No starting quarterback returning, but we know that they've got a very, very good one in the fold. So Alabama, Miami, in Atlanta is going to be a good one. Penn State, Wisconsin, right off the bat, a good matchup in the Big 12. Mike Yurich, who's the new offensive coordinator in Penn State, he was the play caller last year for Texas, had 52 touchdowns in 10 games for Tom Herman. He's now the so it's going to be a more pass-happy offense in Penn State. You've got Georgia and Clemson, probably the headline of the whole weekend. Georgia is number five. Clemson is number three. Clemson has a very talented quarterback. And Georgia's without a couple of their best wide receivers who are going to be out for the year. But they have a very stout defense. I think that's going to be a low-scoring matchup. Aggies take on Kent State. It's their 9-11 game. So 20-year anniversary of 9-11. It's clearly not going to be 9-11, but they're going to be on the road. And they've got a big red, white, and blue thing that they're doing in the stadium that commemorates what they did 20 years ago. Should be Jimbo and his guys get it kicked off. And, you know, they're live underdogs in terms of the SEC and a chance to get to the college football playoffs. And then locally, I know U of H and Texas Tech, we talked about that with Dana Holgerson. They're going to scrap. I want to get Keith in. I said if you guys jump in, we will get to you quickly. Let's get Keith, wants to flip it to Texans. And listen, Texans football is going to be next weekend. So we're talking NFL football with Greg Cosell coming up at 7:30. Let's get Keith in here real quick. What's up, Keith?
Good morning, Lance. Yeah, you know, look, there's something about David Culley I find likable. I can't quite put my finger on it.
You said unlikable?
No, likable.
Likable, yeah. No, he's folksy. Yeah. What do you mean
there's
you can't put your finger on it?
Unlikable.
He's like a and plate of mashed potatoes. Yeah, he's very likable. Let's say I'm wrong. You know, does he not give you that comfort food vibe? He's very likable.
I'm going to tell you about David Culley, who's a junkie.
See?
Well, no, here's the thing, Lance. I like Culley, but what I find a little troubling is that he retained Kelly as his OC. And, you know, the guy had Deshaun Watson as his quarterback last year, and they didn't score a touchdown on an opening drive. And, you know, there's a lot of pass plays where they got they're slow developing. And while they will hit from time to time, most of them don't. And this is the NFL. The ball's got to come out quick.
Yep.
The guy doesn't have a great resume. I wanted to get – what are your thoughts on Kelly, the OC, and do you think he deserved to be retained as the OC?
Good question, Keith. I'll make it quick. I'll answer some of this on the other side. I want to stay on – you guys know how ADD I am. Can you imagine with John not here? I might not hit a break. I might not even come close to hitting breaks. It's a total coin flipper. But I will tell you this. I think Tim Kelly, I didn't have a problem with it, and I'll tell you why. The simple fact was they had to pay out Bill O'Brien's contract. They're not trying to flip out a bunch of coaches and pay additional. I think they wanted to keep Tim Kelly here as a way to maybe soothe out the relationship with Deshaun Watson. We have to remember the time frame of how everything went down. Deshaun has a pretty good relationship with Tim Kelly. I think they were hoping that was something that might play in their favor. It clearly didn't. It wasn't going to matter. They don't have to pay extra to get rid of Tim Kelly and bring in somebody else. And, you know, they had some – Deshaun had a big year with Tim Kelly. I mean, the offense had some moments last year, despite not having a great running game. So I didn't have a huge problem with it, but this could be a one-and-done situation for Tim. Well, I say one-and-done. I mean, he could be out of here after this year or might get a couple years, but I don't think Tim Kelly's going to be the long-term guy. he better pull some magic this year. And he simply, and it's not even really on him all that much. I mean, we'll see how good he is. He's going to have to get, you know, he's going to have to squeeze that, what is it called, squeeze the turnip or squeeze the beet, something like that. I already know about lemon and lemonade, chicken salad, whatever you want to say. That guy's going to have to make chicken salad out of tofu, and I just don't see that happening. I'm going to break it right here. We'll get into that a little bit later, though. I do want to talk about that. Fred Davis is also going to join us to co-host from 8 to 10. So Freddie D will be in here, and he and I will kick it around. Coming up next, I want to take a quick look at where the Astros are, because the state of the Astros right now is a little concerning, and I want to set it up for the weekend, because this weekend you got a big matchup against San Diego. So I'm going to set up the weekend for you with the Houston Astros, and then we're going to jump into a couple other topics. But you guys are welcome to jump in. John Granato is out, but they've let me loose with a lot of caffeine, so that should be fine. 7-1, and an unusual amount of caffeine. And this is like the second one I'm drinking right here, Aaron. So
you're on the Dan Campbell plan.
I'm telling you what.
You're going to buy somebody's kneecap off
today. We're going to get something going. 713-780-3776. You guys jump in. I'll get to your tweets as well. It's Lance Zierlein, Aaron Raybould right here on the bench on ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
This is the bench on ESPN 97.5. You found the bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, guys. As I mentioned before, your Houston Astros, kind of a State of the Union address by me. And first, let's take a look at where the Houston Astros are right now. They're 4.5 games up ahead of Oakland. And it feels comfortable. I feel comfortable at 4.5. I mean, the Astros aren't playing their best baseball, but we know Oakland is definitely not playing their best baseball right now. They're a team who's 37-31 at home. That doesn't bode well for a team that is looking to make the playoffs. You got to be better than that at home. You look at the teams ahead of them in the wild card race. New York Yankees up 1.5 on Boston. The Yankees are at least for that first spot. The Yankees are 39-25. Boston's 41-26 at home. Even Seattle Mariners 40-29. So the A's 37-31, not great. Not great. They're 4-6 in their last 10. However, I bring this up because our Houston Astros, from a standing standpoint right now, they're not that far ahead of the Yankees. So if the Astros were to somehow lose their footing to the A's, if the A's were to take over, and there's 6 games remaining at the end of the season, the Astros are going to have to take on the A's, it would take a monumental collapse against the A's, like a double sweep. Or a 1-5 is what it would have to take, I think, because I don't see – I see this as kind of a boat race coming in. I don't think the A's are going to make up a tremendous amount of ground on the Astros. But based on what we're seeing right now, the chance of making the playoffs right now, the Astros are at a 96.9, according to the analytics from ESPN. 96.9. White Sox 100%, 99% Rays, 92% Yankees. Boston 81%, and then of course the Astros 96.9. But when you look at what they have going on, the Astros, we know that from a health standpoint they are much, much healthier than they have been in the past. You have our guy Urquidy is going tonight, and this is a big matchup. Jake Arrieta for San Diego. You've got Arrieta, then Musgrove, then Paddock for the Padres. In the weekend series, Urquidy, Fromber, and Garcia. Now, you could argue that, I mean, Lance McCullers is certainly in the mix, but right, Garcia is in the mix for offensive rookie for the AL Rookie of the Year. One of the best rookie pitchers out there. He's doing a great job. He's not going to win an award, but he's having a great season. Fromber is back to dominant Fromber, although against lesser lineups, so we'll see how he hangs on against San Diego. But as long as he's throwing strikes, as long as he's got his command, I feel extremely confident with Fromber Valdez. Urquidy's the guy that I'm excited about, really excited. And let's face it, we haven't seen Urquidy pitch for a long, long time. We know Urquidy has some stones that hang way low. We've seen him do it in a World Series against on the road. We know Urquidy can step up when the time arises. What we don't know is where is he right now. He's missed a lot of time, so Urquidy's got to get back into a groove. Does he hit the ground running right now? There's a chance. We'll find out against Arrieta and the Padres tonight. But what's important is I don't see him factoring into a postseason four-man rotation. What I do see is if they end up going to a five-man at all, he should be in the mix ahead of Odorizzi. But maybe even more importantly is if Urquidy gets it going, he could be your 2-3 to 4-inning reliever out of the pen. And one thing that COVID baseball, that pandemic baseball showed me last year, when you had a game every single day in baseball, in the playoffs too, they didn't care. You don't get any days off in the bubble. There's no bubble days off. You get every single day you're having games. One of the things that really stood out is, okay, hey, yeah, you can play like that, even though baseball's a long season and, you know, it was a truncated season last year. But you could play like that, but you've got to have not only good pitchers, you've got to have that long reliever. And the Astros, what we saw the Astros become is a team who understood how to utilize a guy like Christian Javier to their benefit last year. And if Urquidy can be that guy who gets you 2-3 to 4 innings in a game and you can back end him with another starter, I mean, what that does, it protects your bullpen. It keeps you from going to guys who shouldn't be in the game. It keeps you from going to guys who could be worn out by the end of the year. So Urquidy coming back and being a guy who doesn't have much wear and tear, that's a really, really big deal for the Astros if he can get it going. And it's really not even as a starter to me. I see his value because I'm looking at the Astros as a World Series contender. Yeah, I want to keep track of the regular season. Yeah, great. Somebody's got a bobblehead day. Oh, great. First 5,000 fans get a tattoo of Marwin Gonzalez. Whatever the case may be, that's great. Do your giveaways. But what I care about, I got my eyes on the prize, and that's a World Series. And to get there, your bullpen's going to have to be a little bit more consistent. And I think one of the keys is going to be getting one of these starters. So we saw it with Charlie Morton. We saw it with Lance McCullers. They were big when you won the World Series in 17. Last year, you had guys step up and do the same thing, some starters into relievers. And I think Urquidy could be one of those keys this year. So I'm actually very, very excited about seeing Jose Urquidy pitch tonight. It's a 9 o'clock game on ESPN+. You've got San Diego tomorrow. That's going to be a 7:40 starting, and Sunday is going to be 3:10 p.m. Speaking of Marwin Gonzalez, I joked about a Marwin Gonzalez tattoo, or I didn't joke, if you want to get a Marwin tattoo, because he's back. Marwin is back. Now, he's with the Skeeters right now, but he said, oh, I might not be Skeeters, the Sugarland Skeeters Marwin Gonzalez for all that long.
I'm not sure if I can say it on I'm going to be back with the team soon, real soon.
Marwin, don't. Listen, Sugarlands has one of those BJ restaurants. Well, it's called BJ's. That sounded weird. I said they have a BJ restaurant. Oh, that's a good place to be a manager if you have that rep. But it's called BJ's, so it's not what you were thinking, maybe. And I'm definitely glad I said that when John wasn't here. You got a lot going on out in Sugarland. Take your time. Get your Skeeter ball up, okay? Get Skeeter balled. I don't know if you know this or not, but Ledmus Diaz is here, and this is kind of uncomfortable, but he's better than you. So I'm not sure there's a lot of places for you, Marwin. We don't do the trash can thing anymore. I'll make sure people told you that. We're not doing trash cans, and a Ledmus is better than you. So Abraham Toro is better than you. He's not even with us anymore, and he was playing the role of Marwin for a while. So
I wonder if he sold his house when he left for Minnesota. Because if he sold his house and he doesn't have a place to live, technically he gets free housing and free furnished housing from the Skeeters for being
right
a minor
leaguer.
It's
right across the street, right? It's that little...
So stay down there and enjoy the free rent for a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, get yourself right, get yourself healthy.
Of course, there's a difference between... I don't know. Is there a difference for a veteran between the Skeeters contract? Does he Does he get minor league
money?
That's
why I don't know. Does he get minor league money
or does he get his major league contract? Because if it's minor league money, I'd want to get the hell out of there too. What, are you living nine guys in a room? Have you heard some of those stories about minor league baseball? They've got like,
oh, yeah.
It's horrible. It's like being in Dade County jail.
But that's the thing is that the Astros have done.
Next to you.
That's what the Astros have done now is by giving the guys, you know, fully furnished apartments so they don't have to worry about it and putting it on their dime. I think they weren't making them live like that because, hey, we don't have to have nine guys to a one-bedroom apartment because we're not paying for it anymore. So I don't know if they're giving them each their own apartment or they're making them share like a normal team does. Like when you go on the road with a team and they make you share with somebody. But I have a feeling they're not putting nine guys in a one-bedroom apartment at that apartment complex right next to Constellation Field.
Okay. Well, listen. Very, very quickly, I'm going to get Longhorn Keith and I'm going to hit you with a quick reminder about U of H Texas Tech. And then we got Greg Cosell. What's up, Longhorn Keith? No, this is Longhorn Scott. What's going on, Longhorn Scott? If you want to hold on, you can, but this has got to be a quick one because I got Greg Cosell coming up.
Yeah, let's hold on then.
Okay,
come back.
I'm gonna put you on hold. Why don't you jump back in? Probably sometime in the 8 o'clock hour if you want to, and we'll have a longer term conversation about your Longhorns. Right now, I want to tell you about our Houston Cougars. Yeah, the Cougar football is back. This is a big year for Dana Holgorsen. He needs this, but you know he's got some pieces in place. And there's nothing better than all the pageantry and fun of college football. We talked about it before. Actually being out of the stadium, being part of it, is a blast. Don't miss the Good Sam Texas kickoff this Saturday night at NRG Stadium. Come see your Houston Cougars take on the Texas Tech Red Raiders with dynamic quarterback Clayton Toon and the Cougars' hard-hitting defense. Game kicks off at 6 o'clock, but all the fun is going to start at 2 p.m. You can come out early. You can tailgate and check out the Carbach Love Street Tech Fest on the south side of NRG Stadium featuring the Cougar Spirit Walk and a live performance by Randall King. So they got a big old party going on starting at 2 o'clock. Tickets start at only $25, so get your tickets now at Ticketmaster.com and make NRG Stadium Cougs House. Don't miss your chance to be part of the 75th celebration of Houston Cougar football. Come early, be loud, and wear red. Get your tickets today at Ticketmaster.com. Go Cougs.
This is Ed Tuttle Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Welcome back to The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Joining us right now, as he will do every single week for a couple segments, is NFL Films' Greg Cosell, one of my favorites for a long time. And he and I have talked football for a long time, and I really enjoy the fact that I get a, no offense to John Granato, but John's out today, so really excited that I get to do a little solo football talk with my man Greg Cosell from NFL Films. Greg, good morning. How are you doing today?
Lance, I'm doing great. Good to be with you.
Yeah, it's great. It's great catching up, and there's a lot to get to, so I'm going to get right to it. And I'll start with the one that you've talked about for a long time. I'm going to give you a little different angle, probably, and that's Cam Newton. Cam Newton, of course, was released last week at about this time. Mac Jones was named the starting quarterback. Cam Newton is still a free agent. There's not a lot of takers, apparently, on the market, and I don't know if Cam's in any hurry to become a backup quarterback. I guess the question I have for you, Greg, is someone who locks in on this, and I'm gonna rely on your experience to go beyond last year where he didn't play the same after he had COVID, but, you know, how much of that was that and how much was just Cam playing poorly. I'll take you back to the year before. Then people will say, well, he had a shoulder injury then. When you watch the tape, does the tape say that Cam Newton should be a starter for a quality team in the NFL right now?
Well, I think if you're being honest and just using the tape as your guide, you'd probably say no, as a higher level starter. I mean, there's obviously quarterbacks in this league that play, but, you know, I think the thing with Cam, and even in his prime, he was a certain kind of player. He was a physical specimen, as you know, Lance. He was a power thrower. He was a little scattershot at times. He was not purely a timing rhythm player. His physical presence was so overpowering that he was a factor, obviously, with his legs in the design run game and in the second reaction movement game. So those elements were absolutely important to his game. I'm not sure that those elements, particularly the running elements, are what they used to be. He's been hurt quite a bit. He's gotten older. And at this point in his career, you can't rely. You never really could in a strict sense. And I think a coach would tell you this. You never really could in a strict sense rely on him to be a precision player. That just wasn't truly his game. He could make special throws for sure, and he could obviously use his legs and do things at 255, 260 pounds that others could not. But I think if you're designing an offense, and as you know, offensive coaches do not design an offense and do not evaluate quarterbacks based on their ability to extend plays. They evaluate them based on their ability to run the structure of the offense.
Yeah, I think people are just relying on the name Cam Newton because I just don't see a good enough passer. I'll give you an example. Keyshawn and Jason Williams and I don't know who else. I don't know who the third guy was who was part of it today, but they were asked about, you know, which quarterback should be looking for a new job, or which one should maybe, is it time to find a different spot? And they were going through a variety of quarterbacks. And then they brought up Kirk Cousins and with Minnesota. Now, you know, I have no problem with any of the takes on Kirk Cousins. He's a guy who throws an accurate football, but he certainly can't get over the top. We know all the issues with Kirk Cousins. But then someone brought up Cam Newton, and they said, well, Cam Newton would be better off. And all I could think of was this is just that's not a take that's based in logic or based in any real watching of tape or games or whatever the case may be, because he's A, not a fit for that system, but Cam's just not a good enough passer right now. And the league requires quarterbacks to either be very healthy as a dual threat quarterback or to be a much better passer. And that's just not, it's never really been who he is other than that one year when he was MVP, Greg.
No, and I think, you know, you kind of hit it on the head. There's been a lot of discussion over the last couple of years that you can't play quarterback in this league now at a high level unless you have second reaction ability. And that's a fascinating debate, but when all said and done, that's not the way the position is coached. The position is coached to play with precision within the structure and timing of the offense. And yes, are there plays in any given game where the defense wins? Sure there are. But that's not the way that coaches go about teaching and coaching the quarterback position. And if you can't execute within structure with the needed consistency, even if you have some second reaction ability, that's not going to be enough. You know, the thing about the second reaction ability is you have to have an answer then, if you're a believer in that, Lance, as you know, for someone like Tom Brady. You can't just say, oh, he's great. You have to understand the process of why quarterbacks play at a high level, not just say flippantly, oh, well, you need to be able to run around now in today's NFL. And you're 100% right. He's not good enough at this point in his career. And, you know, it's funny. Preseason is preseason, but you could even see it when he was out there versus when Mac Jones was out there. Because even though Cam made some really good throws, they always seemed like they were a beat or two late. And when Mac Jones was out there, because his whole game is built on timing, rhythm, decisiveness, precise ball placement, you could just see that everything happened within the structure that it's supposed to happen.
I think this is more of a philosophical thing, but, and I look at things from a team building standpoint. I know you do too. And so maybe sometimes you look at it a little different. I think you have to be objective about how a team can get better. I think too many people rely, and this is really in all of society, in every facet. We don't have those shades of gray anymore. Everything is black or white,
yep,
in a manner of speaking. And there's this belief that, okay, well, this is the way you win. You win with this kind of quarterback. No, wait, you win with this kind of quarterback. No, wait. And the reality, Greg, has always been you win with the quarterback that can fit your system, or you fit your system around your quarterback. But there are different ways to win, and I feel like so many teams in the NFL, and there's just so much talk about getting caught up in the copycat stuff rather than recognizing the different ways there are to cook the egg.
And I agree with that. And I think that that's where the team comes into play. I mean, there have been studies done, and I've talked to coaches about this, with young quarterbacks, rookie quarterbacks coming into the league. And maybe it seems very intuitive when you just talk about it, but what is largely the most defining characteristic of the success for young quarterbacks, high drafted young quarterbacks, is the quality of the team they're on. And we evaluate quarterbacks in a vacuum. You isolate their traits. That's what you do when you evaluate a quarterback. You isolate their traits and their attributes and their characteristics, and you decide in your mind, based on how you evaluate a quarterback, whether that fits in the NFL. And there's certain things that are non-negotiable, and then there are other things that are negotiable. But when you get to the bottom of it, Lance, as you know, you've got to be able to execute an NFL offense within the structure. And to be cliched but true, you have to be able to play with timing, make the right decisions, get the ball to the right receiver at the right time with precise ball location.
That's what I think is so fascinating, is that you and I look at all these quarterbacks before the draft, and then we have to incorporate what we see in the NFL, and you say, okay, when you project a college player to the pro, and we both know the offenses and the games are very, very different. I mean, it's like different sports being played sometimes. But I think what's interesting is there are certain elements that I prioritize, but I'm always learning about quarterbacks, and I try to admit when I'm wrong and learn why I was wrong. Why was I wrong on Josh Allen? Okay, well, on Josh Allen, the reason I was wrong is because the unlikely scenario of becoming more accurate, which this is kind of an outlier historically, to take a guy with those accuracy issues and make him more accurate, that is something that has happened through hard work and work on the mechanics. But also, there is something to the fact that he improved with his timing a little bit, with his anticipation, but they also put him in an offense where he can succeed, and he had wide receivers that could work. Why Justin Herbert? Did I think that he wasn't... You know, I didn't think that he had the mentality to lead a locker room full of guys because he is an introvert. Mina Kimes from ESPN had a great article about that. He's leading right now as an introvert, and all of his skills, I had him as the number one quarterback when he was a sophomore, and then by the time he was, you know, a senior coming out of Oregon, I'm like, hey, just never got better from his sophomore season. And all of a sudden, look at the year he had this year as a rookie. It's we have to be careful about how quickly we either anoint or decide that a guy can't play. I haven't given up on, and I wasn't a Daniel Jones guy coming out at all from when he came out of Duke. I thought he was a solid quarterback. Didn't think he should have been drafted that high. So far, it hasn't been warranted, but he's had no help. And I think this year, Daniel Jones can surprise some people potentially.
Yeah, and that's why when I evaluate, and again, you know, when you talk to people and you do shows and you get asked whether you think a guy will make it or not, and that's always a hard question for me, because when I evaluate a quarterback, I evaluate it by strengths, weaknesses, transition, how I see they could transition and project to the league. They have defined strengths, but they also have some weaknesses. So, you know, when a quarterback like Justin Herbert, who I think a lot of us believed had some concerns based on his tape, okay, I've never met Justin Herbert, so I can't speak to the other part of that, but just based on his tape, there were a couple of things you saw that just made you say, well, I'm not sure. I think that's going to have to be cleaned up for him to become a really good quarterback in the league. And then he goes out as a rookie, and those things were cleaned up. So, you know, you and I were not there every day, but I'm a big believer in coaching. So they obviously worked with him on those specific things that were clearly apparent and evident to everyone who watched his tape at Oregon, and they worked on those things, and they helped him and cleaned it up to a meaningful degree. So all you can do is, or all I can do, is look at the tape and define the strengths, the weaknesses, but I don't know how someone will be coached. I don't know their capacity for learning. I know for a fact with Justin Herbert that they give a lot of new intelligence-type tests now. Now there's something called athletic intelligent quotient. I'm sure you've heard of it. There's other things along those lines. And I know he scored extremely well on all those kinds of tests, whatever they mean.
Yeah, there's so much to cover. Greg, great stuff. We're gonna do it for another segment here. Coming up in about a couple of minutes, we're going to break now. We'll be back in about 2.5 minutes. And we'll get into Carson Wentz, the return. We'll talk for a second about some of the Texans players. And I want to ask Greg a couple thoughts on some of the Texans' newer players and get his thoughts there. And then we've got a couple other of issues, including Tony Romo just referred to one of the quarterbacks in the league as potentially the next Pat Mahomes. You may be surprised to find out who it is. 744 right here on the bench.
G'day, mates. This is Sam Windsor of the Houston Sabercats. When I'm not playing rugby, I'm listening to John and Lance on the bench. Go Sabercats.
The conversation continues on the bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Hey, it's Lance Zierlein with Greg Cosell. We do this with Greg Cosell from NFL Films every single week. And you know what? If you guys, just to kind of train you up a little bit here, I know John and I will have a lot to talk about with Greg Cosell, but if you ever have a question about your favorite NFL team that you think is something that the rest of the world would like to hear, then you can give us a call, 713-780-3776, and Aaron will listen to it, and he'll decide if you get on the air. It'll be that simple. So this week, Tony Romo, who I certainly respect a great deal, I'm sure you do as well, Greg, he made the comment that he thought that Zach Wilson, the rookie from BYU with the New York Jets, had rare stuff and could be the next guy with the Pat Mahomes trajectory, that he really liked some of the things that he was able to do. And we know Zach Wilson is a guy who grew up idolizing Aaron Rodgers. And so he plays like Aaron Rodgers. If you watch him, he'll make throws. When you see him throw, it looks similar. He throws off balance, off platform frequently, but he's fairly accurate in doing so. I don't know. When I watched him, Greg, it was tough for me because 19 was a lot worse than 20. 20 was much better than 19 on tape. But he also played lesser competition, and there were a lot of times where he would skip on the right reads just to take shots down the field where he had, you know, matchup advantages, frankly, with his big receivers against lesser cornerbacks. I'm curious to get your thoughts on, because I'm certainly willing to be wrong. I had more of a boom-bust grade on Zach Wilson, which is certainly high potential, but I'm willing to be wrong on him. What are your early thoughts on what Zach Wilson is, who he is, and what we can expect from Robert Saleh and the Jets in year one?
Well, we'll start with the offense with which he's in. He's basically in the Kyle Shanahan offense because Michael Floor is there as the OC, and that's the offense they're going to run. And I actually think that's a good offense for him because there's a lot of designed boot action to get him out on the edge. The reads are extremely well-defined. There's a ton of run action. The offense is built on the run action and the marrying of the run game and the pass game, so it looks very, very similar to the defense, particularly second-level defenders. But I think what Tony Romo said, others have said that as well, and I think they say that for this reason, Lance, is, and again, and now you get into the extend the play element. He has a live, loose arm. He's got light, active feet. There's almost a trick shot element to the way he throws at times, as you said, makes a lot of throws off platform, sometimes when he needs to, sometimes when he doesn't. So there's that element to his game, and because he's clearly got that live, loose arm, not a power arm. So in other words, I would make that distinction that someone to me like Matthew Stafford has a power arm,
right,
whereas I think that Zach Wilson has a live, loose arm. But because he's got the feet and the ability to get outside the pocket, and his feet are athletic and quick and active, he has that look to his game. So we will see. He's not very big. I've talked to people who've been around him. I've not been around him, and they say they're even surprised by how small he is when they're around him. So we'll see. But he's in an offense that kind of demands structure, but does have the designed movement element to it, which plays to what he is.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what happens. He also made the comment that this is as deep as he's ever seen quarterbacks. I would tend to agree. With all your experience in watching pro football, do you recall a time where we've seen this many quarterbacks? And I mean, not just, you know, it's not Roethlisberger anymore. It's not it's not Breeze anymore. I mean, there's some high end, good quality young quarterbacks. Some of them still have to prove themselves. But this is really deep for the quarterback position compared to what we have, you know, what's been the narrative over the past.
Well, I think what we tend to see now is we tend to see more efficiency with quarterbacks. And I think a lot of that has to do with offensive design, offensive scheming. So quarterbacks have become efficient. You know how people think. People think that if a quarterback doesn't go deep in the playoffs or get to a Super Bowl, that no matter what he does during the course of a regular season. You mentioned Kirk Cousins earlier. You know, you can say what you want about Kirk Cousins, but pretty much every year he throws over 30 touchdowns and 10 or fewer interceptions. And I think if you said that to any coach before a season, that you give me those numbers plus a 68 or 69% completion percentage, they'd probably say I would take that in a heartbeat. But in the next breath, no one would say that Kirk Cousins is a top five or six or seven quarterback in the NFL. So I think schemes, and particularly that scheme, which is the scheme Baker Mayfield is in, the Shanahan tree is expanding, and I think that scheme puts up quarterback numbers. So then you have to decide what you truly think of the quarterback with his traits and attributes versus just an evaluation of numbers.
Yeah, no question. But so much more to get into with that, because I've got thoughts on that. I still love the outside zone as a primary running game for an offense, because you can do so much from a play action standpoint off of it. I mean, it's just and that's the Shanahan / Gary Kubiak. I want to bring Kubiak in because,
well, even Sean McVay. I mean, that's
LaFleur,
and the key parts to that that's overlooked is what that does to the defensive line. Everybody thinks a run action is just for second level defenders, and sure it is, but with the outside zone element, what you add is you add the fact that first level defenders, defensive linemen, their initial move is lateral. So they're not rushing upfield to the quarterback. They have to redirect. And that gives the quarterback just that extra beat, that extra second or so to be clean in the pocket. And that's critical.
Absolutely. It helps you cheat your pass protection. I mean, it really does. There's so many advantages to it. Let's get Brandon in here. Brandon wants to talk about the Cardinals with Greg Cosell from NFL Films. What's up, Brandon?
Hey, Lance, how's it going, man?
I'm doing good, man.
Great show, man. I listen every morning to you guys.
I appreciate it.
Greg, honored to talk to you, man. Love your work, too, as well. I was out at Cardinals training camp just for a little bit, and like I said, I'm former Houston Texan, turned Arizona Cardinals fan. That's kind of funny there, too, as well. But I'm a DeAndre Hopkins fan, and I've been following this guy for a long time. And I think they're just kind of following the team. I guess my question, Greg, is this kind of the year where it all clicks for Kyler Murray and, of course, the offensive weapons now around him, A.J. Green, the pick Rondale Moore, and then defensively, you know, adding a guy like Watt, a good team leader, a guy, you know, just a great, great defensive lineman, plays technique very well. And then you put a guy like Buda Baker in the secondary. Just kind of curious, is this the year that, I guess, Cliff Kingsbury's on the hot seat and Cardinals know they have a tough division for the NFC West? So just kind of curious if they kind of put it together, Greg, and I'll hang up the list. Thanks, guys.
Boy, Lance, Brandon gave me a lot to unpack there.
Yeah, I know. All right, give them all your thoughts on Arizona ever.
Well, one of the things that will be very intriguing to me is, you know, coaches coach what they know, and Cliff Kingsbury's background is the air raid, and the air raid at its core would like to have four wide receivers on the field. They were the second highest percentage team in the league last year using four wideouts behind Buffalo, and I think with what they did in free agency with A.J. Green and the draft with Rondell Moore leads me to believe, and we won't know till they play regular season games, that you could see a lot more 10 personnel, one back, four wide, which I think fits. It's what Kyler Murray is as well, because it expands the field horizontally as well as vertically, depending on your route concepts, and it then gives him room to run, which he's really, really good at. So I'm very curious to see if that's one thing they do on offense. You know, defensively, Vance Joseph has been very aggressive, man coverage, blitz. I'm very anxious to see Zaven Collins in the context of this defense, because he's a 6'4", 260-pound guy who moves like a man who weighs much less. He's an athletic guy for that size. I think you can do a lot with him. I think in Isaiah Simmons' second year, you can do a lot more with him. He sort of went through that learning curve a year ago, had some welcome to the NFL moments, and my guess is in his second year, he'll play more to his athletic traits, which are pretty special. So corner is a position, I think, that's a concern right now, and when corner is a concern, it's always an issue for you. But this is an intriguing team, and I will say this, and this is purely based on tape. I think Kyler Murray needs to become a far more consistent passer, not runner. He's a phenomenal runner, but far more consistent passer to reach that upper echelon of quarterback play.
You know, we can say what we want, like You know, every team I talk to, primarily in the NFL, will all tell you that they believe that your quarterback now, they're coming around to the fact that you've got to have a level of mobility. It's just the game is too fast. There's just the from a blitz standpoint, you got to be able to think quickly. Your mind, there's not going to be a whole lot of Tom Brady's and Peyton Manning's out there anymore. However, with that said, and having that element of mobility, it always gets back to eventually you have to be able to win from the pocket when a team forces you to. And I think that's, you know, that's something that's going to be true forever. It's just the game is not going to be played like the college game. And eventually, right now, Lamar Jackson's got to counterpunch. Some teams have made some adjustments, and he's got to show he can counterpunch. But so does Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray, frankly, at times during the second half of the season, very unimpressive as a passer last year.
No, he was scattershot. And look, because he's always been small, he's had to learn how to throw at his height. But when all said and done, when you're throwing too much off balance, even if you've grown up doing that, you're still off balance. And he just misses too many throws. There was a scattershot element to his passing a year ago. Now, on the other hand, there'll be times when he makes unbelievable throws doing that, but he just needs greater consistency throwing from the pocket.
That's executive producer of NFL Matchup. He has been with the NFL Films for decades, does a phenomenal job. We're super happy to have him here every single Friday for a couple segments. My old friend Greg Cosell. Greg, thanks so much for joining today, and look forward to talking to you next Friday.
Appreciate it, Lance. Thanks so much.
All right, coming up next, Freddie D. Fred Davis is going to step in, and we're going to kick it around. University of Houston got some really good news. Yeah, they played Texas Tech starting, well, I guess season kicks off on Saturday. So that's going to be the start point. But they got a bit of what I consider to be good news from Max Olson over at the Athletic, and we'll tell you what that is here in about 2.5 minutes on the bench. ESPN 97.5, 92.5. Hit me up on Twitter at Lance Zierlein, and we will bring you into the show.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting innovationmap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map.